presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I was in a pretty geeky mood this morning, which many of you, including the folks that work with me, would probably say could describe me as every morning, which is probably fine. I'm okay with that description being used for me. But nonetheless, I was in a geeky mood this morning. So I have been kind of contemplating this for a little while and actually kind of dug in and did a little research this morning. And I got to tell you something. You ever do like a lot of work on something only to be left with results that are kind of disappointing? This is one of those examples where I thought that I was going to find something that all of you would find really, really cool. And you would all say, wow, BA, thanks for telling me that. But upon further review, maybe none of this really matters all that much. But I still think it's a fun conversation. Let me tell you where the genesis of this came from. Charlie Potter, an Alabama reporter, works for 24/7 Sports, was watching the NFL draft. He saw on the screen, they throw up Mel Kiper's, and it's never too early to start talking about this, big board for the 2020 draft. We've written about this at DogNation.com, too, I think. By now, you may be aware of this, that when you look at the big board for the 2020 draft, in fact, for those of you watching on video, show this to you. You see two names from the Georgia Bulldogs on here. Now, Georgia's not the only school with two names on here. Tua Tagovailoa and Jerry Jeudy, both from Alabama, in the one and two spot. But Georgia does have two names. It's offensive tackle Andrew Thomas. It's quarterback Jake Fromm. Now, I started kind of wondering. I wonder how frequently it is we've seen teammates end up being top 10 picks in an NFL draft. Now, it's probably worth pointing out for the people who care more about the NFL draft than I do, I think these early projections, even from the guys like Kiper and McShay that do this stuff for a living, the early projections on a lot of this kind of stuff, I would think people would say, have been notoriously wrong over the years. That's what I'm going to think people are going to say. But this is the best guess that we have at this time, and Kiper's been doing this for a million years. So let's just assume as a hypothesis, as the smart kids like to say, that Kiper's right, and both Andrew Thomas, Georgia's left tackle, and Jake Fromm, Georgia's quarterback, both end up going in the top 10 of the NFL draft. Well, how frequently has that happened? Well, I did a little research on this, and here's what I can tell you. Since 2010, which dates back now, what, 10 NFL drafts, we've seen 19 quarterbacks taken. We've seen 12 offensive tackles taken. But only once over the course of the last decade have teammates done this. Now, you may be wondering, well, who are the teammates that were selected in the top 10 of the NFL draft? You got to go back to 2010 when Sam Bradford, a quarterback, and Trent Williams, an offensive tackle, were taken from the Oklahoma Sooners. They actually end up having, I want to say, three of the top four picks in that year's draft or whatever. So that's, I guess, in and of itself kind of interesting. Georgia's actually never had teammates be drafted in the top 10. It's had multiple first-round picks a few times. The closest it's come to having two top 10 picks would have been the 2009 draft, the year Stafford went number one overall and NoSean Marino went number 12 overall. That's the closest Georgia's had to having a top 10 picks. So all of this up to this point, you may be saying, is pretty interesting. But here's where I think my research kind of falls apart. I guess the thing that kind of disappoints me a little bit in this, thinking about what Georgia could do in the 2020 draft, is what matters to me on this show the most, and I think what matters to most of you, is we want Andrew Thomas to get his money. We want Jake Fromm to get his money. We love seeing the guys like DeAndre Baker, who are going to get their money now to be drafted in the first round. But what we really care about is the results on the field. Well, according to this sort of stack of research I've done, being first-round picks, top 10 picks, has not necessarily contributed to winning for the teams they played on as much as I might think. In fact, those two teammates, Trent Williams and Sam Bradford, were drafted in the 2010 draft. The 2009 Oklahoma team, which is the last one they played on, the team went like 8-5. They had four first-round picks, three in the top, I forget what it was, top three or top four, top five, something like that. They went 8-5. Now, that Oklahoma era had some good teams. That just didn't happen to be one of them. Same way with the offensive tackles. Like this year, Jonah Williams was taking number 11 overall. That was obviously a playoff team. But the year before that, Mike McGlinchey, Notre Dame, pretty good team, but not a great team. Go back to before that, 2016, Ronnie Staley from Notre Dame, good, not great. Jack Conklin, Michigan State from that same year. I think that was a playoff team the previous year. But then it's like Brandon Scherff from Iowa, Eric Flowers from Miami. You know, a lot of these top 10 picks don't end up actually contributing to winning on the field as much as you might think. But I think it would still be overall good for Georgia if this could indeed happen, because this is one of those things where Georgia's already set up to be pretty good. So if you could just add an even better season from Andrew Thomas and an even better season from Jake Fromm, you might set yourself up for a little more success in that regard. And for what it's worth, even with all this early attention being paid to where Andrew Thomas might be drafted, where Jake Fromm might be drafted, there is some evidence to suggest that these two guys are doing a pretty good job of compartmentalizing that, especially Thomas. I mean, listen, at the beginning of the spring practice, I looked Andrew Thomas right in the eye and say, do you realize that you might be a top 10 pick by the end of next spring? If somebody was about to write me an eight-figure check, that's all I'd ever be thinking about. But for Andrew Thomas, he says, no, I got business to take care of before that comes around. In fact, here's what Andrew said about that.
I try not to pay too much attention to it. I feel like it's just a distraction. I can't, you know, be complacent. I got to continue to work because that's the only way I can get to where I want to be.
Listen, don't you love that word? And doesn't that one word, complacency, he says, I don't want to be complacent. Doesn't complacent just end up describing the haves and the have-nots in college football, the teams that achieve the highest level, the teams that miss out on that, the players that achieve at a higher level, they find their full athletic potential, the players that don't? Isn't complacency, doesn't that end up being a major difference maker when it comes to stuff like that? Andrew Thomas says, I ain't worried about the draft. I don't want to be complacent right now because I got business to take care of in the uniform that I'm wearing right now. And I do love that. And it kind of leads you to the conversation of, for both these guys who could be top 10 picks, Fromm and Thomas, what do they got to do to get to that point? Well, you know, for Jake Fromm, you know, Kirby Smart address this pretty openly during the spring practice. This is a different situation for him at quarterback than it's been before. Taking that next step as a quarterback, as a player, leading Georgia to where it has not gone, putting himself on a plane that he has not been, you know, this spring, leading the summer, is an important time for that. And for Kirby Smart, he kind of joked about this, at least I think he was kidding, back early in the spring, saying, hey, by now Fromm's been through all of this, so he has to find that kind of intrinsic motivation to find out what it is that he doesn't know and what it is that he still needs to keep getting better with. Here's Kirby Smart on that point.
Well, that's obvious. I mean, he understands things, and there's probably times that he has to be careful that he doesn't get bored, because I know defensively he knows every call we got. He hears the call. He's already got his call. He knows what the next step is from getting their call and our call half the time. But that's part of growth, and that's part of him in kind of implementing his leadership to our offense to use the experience he has and say, you know what, we're not executing well. We went three and out against the two defense. Well, that's not who we are. And I think you see him assert himself more as he's gotten more and more comfortable with it. And he's done some good things with the ball and got to make good decisions with the ball, which he's done thus far.
Another great word from Kirby, assert. Assertive. You want assertive quarterbacks. How does Fromm assert himself with this team right now, knowing that he's kind of learned a lot? How does he help other guys learn? Well, I asked Jake Fromm that question myself. And as you think about Fromm moving towards the front end of the first round of the NFL draft next season, what's a way in which he can be assertive? Well, maybe it's breaking in a new crop of wide receivers and finding a level of chemistry with them that raises their level of play and proves to the world that Fromm really does deserve to be mentioned at the top of next spring's draft. Here is Jake Fromm on that next step of developing this chemistry with this brand new bunch of Georgia wide receivers.
Yeah, reps, talking to them, getting a feel, seeing a lot of different looks from the defense. It really helps when the defense gives us their best look. And I think it really just comes down to a lot of reps, you know, a lot of extra time watching film with those guys, seeing what they're seeing. Hey, this is what I'm seeing. It's just an ongoing back and forth. It's kind of like a conversation. And you just kind of start it that way and keep building it and keep throwing the ball.
I mean, Fromm sounds like an experienced quarterback when he says those things, and no doubt he'll take his comfort and his familiarity with the Georgia offense, and hopefully he'll use that to make the wide receivers he'll be playing with this year better, and also the quarterbacks who are following him behind him. Maybe he'll use that to teach them and help them grow as well. I mean, I think the overall point when you look at Fromm in the midst of this 2020 top 10 draft pick conversation is that most Georgia fans are probably not surprised to see Andrew Thomas mentioned there, but there's still a crop of Georgia fans that may be wondering, is Jake Fromm really about to take that step? Is he really about to make that move? And I think it speaks to this pocket of Georgia fans who maybe haven't always fully appreciated Fromm for what he is and Fromm for what he can do for the Georgia program. A guy that would, I think, agree with that is former Georgia quarterback David Green, who knows this position well and who has watched Fromm over the last couple of years. And when he sees Fromm, maybe he sees what a lot of these draft experts see. One of the best quarterbacks in all of college football. Here's David on that point.
It's amazing, Brandon, how fast things change. Yeah, it used to be I mean, heck, even when I was playing this 15 years ago, you know, guys would come in, they typically redshirt a year and kind of get the, you know, get you know, familiar with the offense and the whole deal and the speed of the game. I mean, now guys are coming in, they're ready to play, they're ready to make a difference. And you just, it's amazing how fast things are changing. Justin Fields comes in, then he's back out, and changes, he's going to be starting at Ohio State. It's such a fast pace. The game's changed dramatically. You know, Georgia fans, we got to pinch ourselves. I mean, it's pretty amazing what Fromm has been able to do since he's been our quarterback. I mean, taking us to the national championship as a true freshman, and just really the way he's handled himself and represented himself in the school at the quarterback position. Well, we've been pretty fortunate because he's been a consistent player for us.
You mentioned back in the year 2000, Jim Donnan's last year. That's a bad edit on my part. My bad on that. But the point from David there is that when you've watched him grow and develop, you've seen a guy that's not only made himself better along the way, he's made his teammates better. And I think that's the kind of thing the draft guys will notice. And on that final point, I'm going to try to make this one pretty quickly, is that that's also the kind of thing that Andrew Thomas has done for Georgia himself. He has not just grown and developed as an offensive lineman, but he also seems to be working to develop the rest of the Georgia offensive line as well, making them better along the way. I mean, that's been one of the big pushes from Kirby Smart throughout the entirety of Thomas's career. Don't just be good, make others better. Be a vocal leader. In fact, here's an example of what Kirby has said to Thomas in the past.
The challenge for Andrew is, can he become a vocal leader, not just a leader by example? He's got to learn to push other guys and challenge other guys, and I think he can be that kind of impact leader.
But here's what I want you to listen. If you haven't, you know, kind of followed all of this, let's kind of bring this all to a close by saying this, that it'd be one thing for Fromm and Thomas to both become top 10 picks. And that in and of itself would be good for them. But these two players are unique in the fact that they have done what Kirby Smart has just said there. Being a vocal leader, making others better as they've risen up the ranks of the football world and gotten the attention of draft scouts, they have caused a rising tide among the rest of the Georgia players as well. Let me give you a final example of this. Had a chance to talk to Isaiah Wilson not too long ago. Got a chance to ask him about watching Andrew Thomas play in 2017. Thomas played as a true freshman. Isaiah Wilson didn't. Wilson said that was an opportunity for him to do a lot of learning. And now Wilson, who became a freshman All-American last year and is a pillar on the right side of Georgia's offensive line, much the same way Georgia's Thomas is on the left side, it sounds like Wilson credits Thomas for a lot of that growth and development. So Kirby wants Thomas to be a vocal leader. Well, it sounds like he's already doing that. Here's Isaiah Wilson.
I want everybody on the team to win. I don't care who you are. If you're on this team and you're in red and black and you're wearing that G and you're out there grinding with me, I want you to win. Whatever's best for the team is what I want. My freshman year, I wasn't ready to play. I sat down and I learned how to be ready to play. In 2018, I played.
So listen, I think that when you hear Wilson say those things, I think it's pretty clear that Thomas has been a leader for Georgia. So this is not just a guy working on one day making himself a lot of money. He's also seemingly working in such a way that others can follow his example, and that's making the rest of his Georgia teammates better. I think you can say the same thing for a Jake Fromm as well. Statistically speaking, being a top 10 pick in the NFL draft hasn't always led to team success. But in the case of Fromm and Andrew Thomas, I think there's a chance that they confound that. And I think there's a chance that they do kind of chart their own course when it comes to that kind of thing. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Kind of long off the top today, but I had a lot I wanted to cover. Good to have you with us, whether you're watching live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. And we are available as a podcast pretty much wherever you can find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. We're going to get Jeff Sintel in just a moment. We'll do a Marlowe's Tavern insider update with him. We'll get new information on some of the five-star prospects that Georgia's chasing down for his 2020 class. We'll also hear more from Georgia coach Kirby Smart later on. Some thoughts on Nolan Smith, Nakobe Dean. We'll kind of dive in and where those two freshman linebackers leave off after the end of spring practice here this season. That's going to be a fun conversation. But I was also kind of watching online a little bit this week, and I saw something that was kind of interesting. Brett McMurphy is a college football writer, and I guess he's got sources there at the what's known as the Las Vegas Superbook in Nevada. It's the Westgate Hotel and Casino, and they're kind of always among the first to put out really big odds. They got the preseason odds for the college football national championship out. And I was really impressed with where Georgia comes in on this. I probably won't end up being able to do all of this now, but I did want to at least show you off a little bit of this, and we'll set up a conversation. We'll have more a little bit later on the program. In fact, let me show Brett McMurphy on Twitter with the odds from what's known as the Superbook there at the Westgate. It's probably not a surprise to you that the reigning national champion is the favorite here. The reigning national champion is the favorite to win this year's national championship. Clemson is at 2-1. Alabama is at 5-2, which even I can do the math on and understand that's about 2.5-1. So slightly below Clemson on that. But how about Georgia right now? If you're watching a video, you see this. At 7-1 to win the national championship. Well ahead of anybody else in the rest of the pack. Ohio State at 10-1. Oklahoma, Michigan both at 14-1. Then everybody else 25-1 or worse. So Georgia is right there in that 7-1 category to win the national championship. Clearly behind both Alabama and Clemson, and clearly well ahead of everybody else in college football. And it kind of leaves a Georgia fan, I guess, left to wonder, what do you do with all of this? Because it seems like what you've just done there is taking a snapshot of how the 2018 season ended, and you're saying, at least according to the folks who put their money where their mouth is, that the 2019 season is going to start off much the same way. Georgia way better than everybody else, but Alabama, the team that's beaten it the last couple of years, and Clemson, the team that's got the trophy that Georgia wants. That's one of the things that Georgia's really going to be wrestling with this year of how does it keep its competition behind it at bay, and how does it move up and take down a team like Alabama and Clemson that has not done yet. We're going to have more on this later on in the program. I want to look at some of the things that Kirby Smart has said on this kind of stuff in the past. We'll do that a bit later on, but for now, we're kind of running a little long here. So let's get you what you want on a Tuesday. Let's get you a chance to talk to Jeff Sintel and get some recruiting information. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
You know, each week here on Dog Nation Daily, Jeff Sintel gives us his twist on UGA recruiting. Where the guys are going to go, what they're thinking, what's the latest. Jeff does it like nobody else. And when you want chef-inspired food with a twist, you want Marlowe's Tavern because they also do it like nobody else. They take great care in the ingredients they use for the dishes that you love. And you need to try out the tavern right there in your neighborhood to find out for yourself what Jeff Sintel and I have been saying for quite some time. It is just one of the most satisfying meal experiences you can have. In fact, Jeff Sintel, I saw some photos from you on social media over the weekend. Looked like you enjoyed a nice Marlowe's Tavern brunch recently, which makes me very jealous.
Yeah, Brandon, my local good morning, sir, by the way. My local Woodstock location on Sunday brunch, they have it. And this message here is basically for those who hear the phrase red velvet cake, French toast.
Oh yeah.
And don't go, "Oh my gosh, that's too rich for my taste. That sounds a little bit too much, too sweet and salty, or sweet and savory for my breakfast palate." That's not for those of you. We're talking about the offensive linemen, the defensive linemen, those tight ends that want to put on about 20 pounds. When you see red velvet French toast, I mean, don't you just have to try at least a little bit of it?
Yeah, nothing sounds better to me than that right now. That sounds fantastic. And by the way, if you want to find out about the tavern close to you, the brunch options they may have, the special events or great offers they have going on, text the word Marlowe's. That's Marlows, no apostrophe, just Marlows, to 24242. The number, once again, 24242, and you can find out about all those kinds of things. Jeff, let's also take a moment to find out some of the stuff going on with UGA recruiting. And I guess, in a roundabout way, I'm a little disappointed, I guess, because it seems like the visit high from G-Day has kind of subsided a little bit, and a lot of this online chatter, which I like, has for the most part kind of quieted down. I'll give you a perfect example of this. Five-star linebacker Mikael Sherman, you know, there's still a lot of reporter talk out there. There's a lot of prediction talk out there when it comes to Sherman, but for the most part, it seems like he individually has kind of gone radio silent here. What do you make of the latest on Sherman these days after his UGA visit?
Well, I'm sure under the online chatter category, we remind this, Brandon, we need to make that a part of Before the Edges, an online chatter section or something like that. But you noticed, Brandon, I'm sure you did, in the wake or even during his official visit to Ohio State last week, that crystal balls continued to pop up for Georgia.
That's right.
Kind of that G-Day wake of good vibes right there. And, you know, with Sherman, I have a feeling that the following is going to happen. I have a feeling now that he's seen Ohio State, he'll probably take maybe one more visit, and that will be to LSU. And let's give the Tigers a due credit here. They are the hottest recruiting team in the country right now. I don't know if everybody saw Rakeem Jarrett over the weekend, five-star wide receiver to go ahead with Jermaine Burton.
Yep.
They also have an added Antoine Sampa, who's an inside linebacker out of Woodbridge in Virginia, Woodbridge High School in Virginia. I think that young man thinks of himself as wanting to walk the Devin White path a little bit for Coach O. And right now, something is going on in Baton Rouge where they're getting a lot of recruits. And really right now, this is going to seem like the NBA playoffs a little bit or AAU basketball. Clemson is developing a super team. LSU is developing a super team. And now it's going to be which other schools are going to get into that top three and which schools can sign 21, 22, 24 guys to challenge for the nation's number one class. We all know Alabama's going to be there. We all know Georgia's going to be there. But really, if LSU, the way they're building up pieces, if Coach Bergeron can ever find himself a quarterback, some of the ones that Georgia has signed over the last few years, that team down there is going to pose a very, very big threat in the SEC West. Alabama.
Yeah, you talk about Rakeem Jarrett. I actually want to talk to you about Jarrett some more in just a moment, kind of some of the stuff that LSU is doing. And I think it's kind of interesting. You use the phrase super teams, and obviously that's what Georgia's trying to be. And as a recruiting force of the last few years, I think it's kind of gotten there. But it would seemingly be some positions more so than others. You know, it's kind of funny for a guy like Sherman, who, as you said, you know, the Georgia predictions were still pretty intense even while he was in Columbus. It's pretty clear that Georgia is making headway at Sherman's position in a way that it's not necessarily at other positions like defensive line. I know that's kind of a tired conversation by now. We've tread on that ground a whole bunch. But it is pretty clear that the five-star outside linebackers like Sherman just see Georgia as a landing spot. And I'm sure some of that's, maybe most of that, maybe all of that, is about the 3-4 defense and, you know, the guys that Georgia has coaching those positions. But it's just kind of funny how Georgia seems to have that connection with Sherman and connection with linebackers, even after signing a bunch, that it doesn't always seem to be able to forge at some of the other positions right now.
I think that has a lot to do with the Georgia scheme and how they can put four linebackers on the field. And really, most of the linebackers that Georgia has lined up for Kirby Smart have been draft picks or playmakers. And now Georgia's going to get maybe an upper echelon talent to put in a lot of those positions as well. I think the other thing that's very interesting, and I'm sure you probably got it in our show progression to talk about today, was I'm sure when you're following a lot of things, Brandon, you noticed a report by a well-respected reporter, Chad Simmons of Rivals.com. He spoke to five-star defensive end Miles Murphy. And Miles Murphy basically summarized his thoughts as that August, late August pep rally that his good friend Tank McCullough followed to make his decision. Well, Miles Murphy is so ready to make his decision that he's moved it up to May 17th. It will be at halftime of the Hill Grove Marietta High spring game. And he feels like he's been ready to commit, according to those comments, for the last two or three weeks. It will come down to Auburn, Georgia, and Clemson. But if we've been following a lot of the reporting, especially a lot of that reporting coming out of the opening, where Murphy kind of told us that he feels very comfortable academically about Clemson and Auburn, still needs to check out the academics at Georgia. Well, he's ready to make a decision, and I don't think he's made a well-chronicled educational academic side of the coin visit to Georgia since that trip. So that one right there, Brandon, you're fond of watching maybe ships, or just calling in ships sailing away into the harbor.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's pretty much a pretty good pronouncement on five-star defensive end Miles Murphy and where he's likely not going to play college football.
In fact, let me show our video audience a recent tweet from Murphy where I think me and probably a lot of other people kind of take this as when he says, who's good at making edits on pictures or videos? Jeff, I've seen that clarion call before. That typically means a young man may be ready for a commitment announcement of some kind. You referenced some of the other reporting that that another site has done on that. But as a fan, which I want to speak as for a moment, I guess you're going to raise the white flag flag a surrender on that. It certainly seems like Miles Murphy has sailed down that same harbor that Brian Brzee once sailed down, and we'll soon be doing a What Went Wrong with Georgia's recruitment of Miles Murphy topic, either on Before the Hedges or Dog Nation Daily One. It looks like the Murphy thing is all but over and done with now.
Well, I would counsel you, my good sir, to just remember where your mood meter was, I guess, mid-April, early April last year, when it seemed like the Owen Papo's ship was definitely moving away from Georgia, despite some hard trolling a little bit, or a lot of fun a little bit by Owen, away from the Georgia recruiting class. I think you will find that the 2019 class at inside linebacker looked pretty sporty as it finally came together.
Yeah, it did. But, I mean, Jeff, I get where the fans are coming from. This comes up on our forum all the time at forum.dognation.com. It is kind of symbolically a bad look to have another really good-looking defensive line prospect from the state of Georgia not go to Georgia. And you can tell me all you want. Well, it's a better position fit at Clemson. Based on what I feel like I understand about football, I think I would probably agree with that. It probably is a better position fit. And yet it still is not a good look for Georgia to watch, you know Murphy, if he ends up going to Clemson, you know looking very similar to Derrick Brown, who spurned Georgia to go to Auburn, and look how well that's turned out for the Tigers. You know, you start adding some of this kind of stuff up together and you say these high-profile misses end up hurting you, because in the case of a Murphy at Clemson or a Derrick Brown at Auburn, not only are they not playing for you in likely big games in the future, they're going to be playing against you.
Yeah, those will be December and January ball games for a lot of those cases right there. But, you know, I guess, Brandon, I think the way you have to look at it is the state of the Georgia program right now. For Georgia to lose out on a Miles Murphy, we say this all the time, there's the 4-3 reason, there's the defensive line reason, there's all the things in personal preference where maybe Miles Murphy just feels more comfortable at a Clemson or even maybe an Auburn in this discussion here. But the thing to think about there is, what does Georgia not have at outside linebacker? Does Georgia have they stacked up about as many outside linebacker prospects as imaginable heading into the 2020 class? I would vote yes. I would also vote that losing Murphy is going to be tough for any program to watch him flee outside the state borders. But I think it's offset a little bit if Georgia can come back and bring in an outside linebacker, a crossover linebacker talent, like the aforementioned Mikael Sherman we just spoke about earlier in our program. I think that's, in a vacuum, losing Miles Murphy is pretty bad, or it's at least one of the things that makes you cringe your teeth a little bit if you're a Georgia fan. But when you have what Georgia has at outside linebacker stacked up, and then you have another on the way in that same class, another top 15 prospect, I think the word here is, I'm not trying to quote or bring up the name of one of Georgia's big fans off the Migos, but offset is the word that comes to mind there. Yes, Miles Murphy is a blow, but look, Georgia does not have a linebacker, an outside linebacker room devoid of first and second round talent at this time.
So let me see if I can kind of sum this up, and let me see if I can say something that you're going to agree with. I think, and we'll just keep this to defense for a moment, because I think Georgia's got its own issues recruiting on the offensive side of the ball that we can address at a different time. But when you look at the defensive recruiting for Georgia, it certainly looks like that you have a situation moving forward where the three-technique defensive linemen and kind of the five-technique sort of classic 3-4 defensive end, that those are going to be two, you know, pretty difficult positions for Georgia recruit. You can go out and find the diamonds in the rough like Jordan Davis, play the nose guard, because, you know, for the most part, it's hard to get those, you know, high recruiting rankings if you're not getting a lot of stats. So you can go out and find diamonds in the rough to be your nose guard. You're just looking for a beefy dude there. But you got to have somewhat athletic to stand next to that guy on the defensive line. There just aren't going to be a lot of those. If you're a potential 3-4 defensive end, it seems like you're going to want to be a 4-3 defensive end or a 3-4 outside linebacker. Convincing somebody to be that 3-4 defensive end doesn't seem like the easiest thing to do. Does that line up with your way of thinking here, that those two positions, defensive tackle next to the nose guard, defensive end kind of lining up, you know, kind of outside, those are going to be two positions for Georgia where finding guys who fit the profile for that and want to accomplish that role or fill that role in college is just not necessarily going to be easy to do?
Yeah, but I'm going to agree with a lot of what you said there, Brandon, as you thought. But I think to me it's more just taking a step back and looking at who Georgia is losing a guy like a Miles Murphy to. You're losing them to a Clemson who has stacked up the best defensive line NFL pipeline of anyone over the last 2 or 3 years. That's really important. Miles Murphy is not going to Miami or Florida State or Ohio State. That's one thing to think about there. The other thing that I think will be just crucial for Georgia, and I think we'll have finally enough data in about 1 to 2 more seasons. Give me the 2020 season, and if you can't see guys like Malik Herring, who have went as a strong side defensive end out of the 3-4 base front to the NFL as a high draft pick, or a Brenton Cox in much the same light, and see where Jordan Davis starts looking up on NFL draft boards as well. And here's where I think the 2019 recruiting class is crucial, because you were just speaking about Georgia getting those diamonds in the rough. Well, Georgia has a true diamond who can play that twitchy 3-tech or a 5-tech in Trayvon Walker. Show me what he does in the Georgia system. Show me what Jordan Davis does. Show me what Zion Logue does. Show me what Bill Norton does. Show me what those guys do in the Georgia system now as the defensive line guys that are going to have to click for the Bulldogs in the next 2 cycles. And then we can probably take a really good look about, can Georgia get the pieces and can Georgia progress the pieces from highly rated recruit to all SEC to high round NFL draft pick? Because that's what Georgia's going to have to do to win this taste test with a Clemson and with an Alabama. That's it, much like the recruiting realm. That's much like where Georgia football is right now. I know a lot of fans are probably happy with the overall talent and the players everywhere on the team, but the thing is not much different than maybe some of Rick's peak years, at least in peak years, where Georgia is one of the 3 or 4 teams that could win it all and could beat anybody. And then here we are again with Georgia, Alabama, and Clemson, except Georgia is clearly one of the 3 best teams or 4 best teams in the country on everyone's board. If you want to say this about Smart's Georgia, he has clearly progressed Georgia from a top 8, top 9, top 10 team to a top 1, top 2, top 3 team. And that is a big, big gap in college football where you can go from 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1, 2, 3, 4 perennial year in and year out on those early, way too early polls. That's where Georgia's progressed. And I think Georgia fans are just going to be very thirsty and somewhat distraught until the Bulldogs break through and beat one of those 2 teams to claim their own national title.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Georgia has progressed. You laid out the ways in which it has, and there's no doubt it's got 2 big steps to take when it comes to Alabama and Clemson in the future. I think you're 100% right about that, too. But, and I'm not trying to be negative, but honesty does compel me to admit that you just referenced a few guys whose NFL draft future will go a long way towards pointing to the development of Georgia along the defensive line. You mentioned Jordan Davis. You mentioned Malik Herring. You mentioned Brenton Cox. Well, Jeff, if memory serves, on G-Day, all 3 of those guys were playing on the red team, not the first team defense. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything necessarily, but you know, in the case of all those guys, there may be some examples that Kirby and Trey Scott are pushing them and still asking for a little bit more. So I'm like you, those are, you know, potentially future pros. I guess Brenton Cox also depends on where ultimately ends up playing, but those are future pros. But as it stands right now, it sounds like there's an extra challenge being given maybe to all those guys that you just mentioned.
Yeah. The defensive line room, and I keep coming back to even Tommy Mitchell is the guy that needs to be thrown in there. True zero tech, true defensive tackle, nose guard for Georgia. He's the kid with the 25, the ACT. You've got Norton, you've got Logue, you've got Walker. All those big bodies are coming into Georgia. And you guys also got to remember guys like Tyler Clark, Mikhail Carter, and Julian Rochester. I mean, those guys are formidable NFL-type bodies. You saw where the defensive line had the most draft selections out of anybody, out of any single position this year for the NFL draft with 31. Those guys, the Tyler Clark, I think that's one under-the-radar storyline for the 2019 season. Georgia needed Tyler Clark to play like he did at the end of the Rose Bowl, at the end of that stretch run of the 2017 season. If Georgia gets that Tyler Clark for the balance of the 2019 campaign, the defensive line starts to look a lot sportier. The same thing goes with Julian Rochester. He puts together a good shelf of film from his senior year, and all of a sudden Georgia's defensive line prospects and targets bubble way up. And you see all these way too earlys about 2020 draft prospects. That's a guy right there, Tyler Clark, David Marshall even in that group, Julian Rochester as well. If those guys can progress to all SEC consideration, let's not even call them All-American consideration, if those guys can get there, then some of those weaknesses that everybody points out when they look at Georgia's front seven last year will be covered up.
Yeah, that's very interesting to think about. Let's finish up with this. You mentioned the name earlier, Rakeem Jarrett, a receiver we've talked about a pretty good bit, does commit to LSU. In fact, I think we'll show that. We showed the commitment tweet yesterday. We can show it again if you'd like. Jarrett putting on the purple jersey, the white helmet of LSU, to announce his commitment there. As you said, this is another receiver win for LSU after getting Jermaine Burton on G-Day April 20th. He commits to LSU, and, of course, a whole host of really good receivers, Terrace Marshall, Jamar Chase, and others, over the last couple of years. Jeff, it seems like this program always seems to win with receivers, but I'm more interested in the Georgia side of this thing. Was Georgia ever really in it for Jarrett? I know that he visited a good bit and seemed to talk up Georgia from time to time, but how much of a loss for Georgia should this be? And I reckon, as we said yesterday, it's also, I guess, semi-good news that he doesn't go to Tennessee, goes to a team at least that Georgia doesn't play every single year, but just kind of open-ended thoughts about Jarrett as it relates to Georgia.
Yeah, Jarrett's interesting. He needs a great quarterback to really make it do what it make it do what he wants to do in college. And LSU needs to hit on a quarterback, maybe even a better quarterback than Joe Burrow was last year for the Tigers. I think with Georgia, they're getting a lot of those upper echelon quarterbacks that maybe LSU covets, but they need to get more receivers. I think context here is very important, Brandon. Rakeem Jarrett, I don't think has been a serious Georgia contender for maybe the last 4 to 6 weeks, maybe even longer. It seemed for a little bit of time that he was trending towards Tennessee. He wound up at LSU. That seemed like the school for him over the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think Jarrett was just one of those guys that had a fun recruitment is what a lot of people on the forum like to label it. He's a guy that's going to see somebody every week. I think his girlfriend is going to go play basketball at Mississippi State. Somehow that school was even in the mix for the nation's number two wide receiver and a clear five-star. Really fast, big body, over 200 pounds. Context and perception is really important here because a lot of my information leads me to believe that Georgia values Justin Robinson as the biggest target in 2020 for its board, the way the Georgia classes view the board. And it's a lot different, Brandon. If you really want to go into deep discussions on Georgia's board, I get the feeling that Georgia rates guys like Lanith Whitehead and Trenton Simpson maybe a lot higher than a five-star like Justin Flo, an inside linebacker. There's a lot of ways where this staff evaluates players a little bit differently than the recruiting industry does. And when you see there where Georgia has a Justin Robinson who was one of its top targets, I think that says that the board is being fulfilled with what the coaches really want. Yeah, they don't have a five-star or a budding five-star like Burton. Yeah, they don't have a five-star like Rakeem Jarrett in the fold. But I think Georgia, according to its calculations, is only going to recruit the talent it values the highest, and not based off the highest stars and ranking.
Really interesting stuff, Jeff. Thanks for giving it to us here on the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And for the folks who want more of that kind of insider update when it comes to the stuff happening at the tavern in your neighborhood, text the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. You can find out why around here we call it chef-inspired food with a twist. It is so tasty, and it's so much care goes into every item on the menu, including the craft cocktails as well. It's just a great time to relax, and date night or significant other, somebody you're trying to impress, Marlowe's Tavern is just a great place to do that. And there is probably a tavern somewhere near your neighborhood, so reach out and find out about the one that might be close to you by texting the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, 24242. We're huge fans of it. We know you will be as well. Jeff, I'm also a huge fan of you. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow afternoon here in our studio for Before the Hedges. We'll have more recruiting talk then, and as I said before, I'll look forward to reading a bunch from you at DogNation.com as well.
Yeah, guys, we'll have a couple recruiting updates hit the site today. A little bit about Andrew Rain, the talented offensive lineman out of Oklahoma. We'll see everybody in the Dog Nation forum, and we'll also see everybody at a Marlowe's in your neighborhood as well. Take it easy, everybody.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff from Jeff Sintel, and I want to actually piggyback off of something that Jeff was saying there a moment ago when it comes to those two chief rivals for the Dogs right now, both in the recruiting trail and some of the stuff on the field. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. Before I get to that, though, let me remind you that each week here on Dog Nation Daily, we talk about our friends at Online Trading Academy. I'm a big believer that sometimes it's important to think about what you want most, more so than thinking about what you want now. And when it comes to the things that you want most over the long term, it's the work that you do now that leads you to that success later on. You know, we're all interested in investing. We all want extra money in our pocket. But a lot of times, the best decision you can make, and frankly, probably all the time, the single best decision you could ever make is the decision to invest in yourself. That's why I like Online Trading Academy. You know, they teach you how to make money in the markets. This is across a spectrum of asset classes, a variety of trading styles, both in the classroom and online. There are a lot of different ways to learn, a lot of different kinds of things to learn about, but you want to be taught by the experts at Online Trading Academy. So do this favor. Go to this website, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. It's trading with a D, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta, and find out about how you can start making money in the markets. All right, so Jeff Sintel says, hey, you know, Georgia is carved out a niche that's better than everybody else. We actually talked about that on the show before Jeff joined us, that if you look at the overall pecking order of kind of where things stand in college football, and, you know, I know it's a tired argument by now, but I do believe at the end of the regular season, Georgia was at least the third best team in college football. It was. Now, should Georgia have been in the playoff or not at this point in time? I'm sort of ready to just kind of move off that and move on and worry about how Georgia makes the 2019 playoff. But at the end of last year, it was pretty clear there were very few teams in the country that were able to match what Georgia was doing on the football field. And as we get ready to start 2019 on the field, it also seems like the snapshot that we concluded 2018 with, well, it's right back one more time. Let me show you the tweet one more time we were talking about earlier in the show from the Las Vegas Superbook that Brett McMurphy had, where the odds kind of speak for themselves. Georgia, better odds than Ohio State, better odds than Michigan, better odds than Oklahoma, better odds than really anybody else by a long shot other than just Clemson and just Alabama. And these kind of recruiting wins that we talk about that kind of tie into a lot of that kind of stuff, it almost seems like you're not going to get over the hump with the Brian Brzees and the Miles Murphys until you're beating those teams on the field. That team, Clemson in particular, get a chance to play them in a playoff and win that game. Antonio Alfano, Alabama, some of the, you know, the recruiting wins the Tide has gotten over the last couple of years that Georgia maybe would have liked to have had. Maybe it's finally slaying the dragon that is Nick Saban, that nemesis that Alabama's been for Georgia. Maybe that's what that's going to take. I'm going to talk more about that in just a moment. Let me see the tweet, though, one more time, though, because I do want to reflect on a couple of the other SEC teams that are on this. I think LSU at 25-1 is a very interesting pick, not because I think they'll win the national championship, but because I think the chances of them winning the national championship are probably better than 4%. That's about what 25-1 works out to be, about 4%. I think that the odds of LSU doing that are greater than 4%, because I think the odds of LSU beating Alabama are at least better than 4%. If you can beat Alabama, you can beat everybody else. I have really changed my tune over the last couple of years when it comes to Ed Orgeron. At one point in time, I did not think he was a very good steward of the LSU program. As it stands right now, because of the recruiting success that Jeff was talking about, because of what we've seen, you know, from him on the field, and Georgia saw that up close and personal in October, Orgeron's actually doing a pretty good job at LSU, and at 25-1, they may represent a bit of a value play. I think it's really interesting that Florida and Texas A&M have the same odds at 40-1. I think A&M is way better than Florida. And I think that, you know, frankly, in terms of realistic chance of winning the title, I don't think Florida belongs on this list. I don't know what A&M does because they play such a difficult schedule, but it's a better team than Florida is. You see Auburn at 60-1. I don't think they're a national championship contender. I don't believe they're a top 10 team. But I believe they're a dangerous opponent for everyone. They are probably good enough to keep somebody else from winning the national championship. You got Mississippi State on this list at 80-1. That's obviously the kind of thing that could have been left out here. But when you look at LSU overall, I think that that is a very interesting team. Not quite as difficult a schedule as A&M because they don't have to play Clemson the way that A&M does. They still got to deal with the rigors of the SEC West. But I think that LSU becomes a pretty interesting team to watch for. And I think it sets up for if Georgia does win that Eastern Division one more time, Is it a foregone conclusion that it's Alabama that'll play on the other side, or is there a chance that a team like LSU could make a little noise and surprise, or maybe A&M as well? That'll be one of the things that makes the fall really fun, and the speculation about that throughout the summer really fun as well. We'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, I want to kind of, before I get to the talk on what Kirby Smart said about Nolan Smith and N'Kobe Dean, you know, I do want to finish up on the point of comparing Georgia to Alabama and Clemson, because this is obviously a year that Georgia fans have been building up and waiting for quite some time. That, hey, you know, 2017 was almost making the college football playoff earlier than some people would expect. That's not when people thought Georgia would make the college football playoff. They thought it might be more like year three or more like year four, but it actually happened early. And now here we are back in 2019 again with Georgia once again facing these massive expectations of making the college football playoff, but you got other teams, Alabama and Clemson, are just as good as they've ever been. Well, what does all of that mean? Well, as Kirby Smart has explained, hey, don't worry about these stair steps towards progression. Don't worry about 2019 being the year. This is the year that's supposed to happen. As Kirby Smart has explained, this isn't about being on any kind of schedule. This is about going out and taking what you can and winning when you have an opportunity to. In fact, he told Georgia fans that very same point at the national championship game a couple years ago, that don't worry about the schedule. Just go out and try to win the game that's in front of you. Here's Kirby on that point.
I'll be honest with you. There's no schedule. I mean, they don't write a book on it and say this time you got to be here and this time you got to be here. You know, it's not really done that way. It's done each year independent of the previous, and this year's independent of last year, just like next year will be independent of this year. And you try to reshape your team based on the personality it takes on.
So from a talent standpoint, there's no doubt that Georgia's grown. It's more talented than it was in 2018. That team was more talented than the 2017 team was, at least on a composite basis, and way more talented than Kirby's first year in 2016. But you still got to go out and take it from the folks who've got the trophies that you want. And right now, Alabama's got that SEC trophy. Clemson's got that national championship trophy. And boy, we're going to talk a lot about trying to knock off those two teams over the course of the next year. And a couple of the guys who might be able to do that are newcomers to the program. They are freshmen. They are freshmen with high expectations. And after one spring practice in the books and a G-Day where we got to see them with our own eyes, so far the results are, well, about as good as would have been anticipated with both outside linebacker Nolan Smith and inside linebacker N'Kobe Dean. Jeff Sintel said this himself a moment ago, that when it comes to the pedigree for Georgia linebackers, that is the envy of the country. There may be a couple position groups where Georgia's still trying to work its way up the ladder on that, but linebacker is not one of those. In fact, after G-Day, where we saw a good bit of Nolan Smith, a good bit of N'Kobe Dean, in some cases working with the starting unit on defense, Kirby Smart, after G-Day, offered his assessment of those guys. Here's what he said.
Their progression has been great. I think what you got to be careful of is, okay, well, why are they playing with the group they're in? Is it because of a lack of depth? Is it because of wanting to get the guys on the other squad more reps and making sure they grow and get reps? They're both very bright. They're both very sharp, intelligent, mature freshmen. But they have not been through a college football fall. They haven't been through a college football game. They haven't played in an SEC game. And they both got a lot of growing to do. But I'm pleased with where they are.
I think most grammar folks would tell you that anytime there's I think it's called an interjection in a sentence, the word but, maybe that's a conjunction. Anytime there's something like that in a sentence, that what happens before the but doesn't matter, it's what happens after the but. And Kirby Smart says, a lot of good stuff, but these guys haven't been through the rigors of the SEC yet. That is true. However, that's not going to do much to dampen expectations for Smith nor Dean. A lot of Georgia fans think they've seen some evidence that those guys can be major competitors. But to drill down a little further on the point of N'Kobe Dean, at least, Kirby Smart says there is still a wide range of possible outcomes for what these guys may do this season. Dean in particular, here's what he said on that point.
His role could be as much as a starting linebacker, or his role could be as much as a special teams player this year. He could be a third down guy. It's going to be determined by the other players and himself, how much he grows and gets better. I can't really say to what he did or didn't do today. It was hard to tell.
So listen, I've said this before, that it has never been more difficult for a freshman player to get playing time at Georgia than it is right now. And that is, as much as we like to make the comparisons between these freshmen and maybe other freshmen that have come through at Georgia, the truth is if you are in not even a starting role, but if you're in a major playing time role on this Georgia defense right now, that means you're really, really good, because it's really, really hard to get that playing time for Georgia at this moment. So maybe in the case of N'Kobe Dean and Nolan Smith, they are about to chart their own path. The truth is, even with Kirby saying those things there, there was not a lot of negative talk. There was not a lot of de-recruitment. He's not doing too much to water down the expectations. Georgia's defense could be very good this upcoming season, and there's a really good chance that two freshmen are two of the biggest reasons why. All right, let's get ready to wrap up this program today, and so good to have you with us throughout for it. Really good recruiting information from Jeff Sintel, and really excited about the offseason conversation that's going to go on over the course of the next few months, as we head towards that 2019 season, because figuring out how Georgia compares to Alabama and Clemson, the two teams that are still ahead of it, and figuring out how Georgia keeps the rest of the competition kind of there in the background, that's going to be a big part of the summer around here, not just on Dog Nation Daily, but pretty much anywhere a college football conversation takes place. But in the midst of all of that, we also like reminding you that good Georgia fans are Gator haters, and Gator haters have reasons to rejoice. It's now been 913 days since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. Boy, isn't that a great way to close out a show, and a good reminder to anybody you may know who may be a Florida fan. Y'all have a great day today. We'll look forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow for Dog Nation Daily. It'll be my pleasure to talk to you then.